Welcome to the Self-Help Podcast, a weekly no-nonsense guide dedicated to your emotional health and well-being. Presented by entrepreneur Edward Lamb and psychotherapist Sean Orford. For more information, visit liveinthepresent.co.uk.
Hello and welcome to episode number 77 of the Self-Help Podcast.
You said that you weren't going to say the numbers.
Yeah, I know. I say lots of things. I got a bit stumped then as well. There's notes here say 76.
It's definitely 77. It is.
And you are listening to the Self-Help Podcast with me, Ed Lamb, and psychotherapist extraordinaire Sean Orford. You alright, Sean?
I'm very, very good.
We've got to be quick here because you've got a gig this morning, haven't you?
Yeah, I'm off doing it's part of an away day with a company, which is very relevant to today because it's all about change.
Ah.
So it's very relevant to what we're
Yeah, we are. Well, the title is dealing with loss, actually, but, well, you've given a bit of it away there because change, loss are linked heavily, as we will discuss.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a blog post about this on the website, so go to liveinthepresent.co.uk for that and lots of other cool bits and bobs. If you're new to the show, dive in, drop us a line, let us know what you think, leave us a review on iTunes, which we appreciate, don't we, Sean?
We do, especially five-star reviews.
It's not, you don't have to, you know, everyone's
four
busy.
Four and a half, okay.
Yeah. What have you been up to, Sean?
I've been having a good time. The highlight of my week was going to see the movie Nativity 3.
Oh, right, okay.
Took a bunch of kids and showed them all up because it was one of those films that was very weak plot, very weak acting, and it was kind of so bad it was good. It was funny.
I've seen bits of 1 and 2, but I've managed to kind of leave the room. But they're big. But they're a big deal at Christmas, those movies. Yeah?
Everybody, it was really weird. Everybody in the cinema were all dancing and clapping and singing along and
really?
Doing stuff. And I couldn't resist it, so I joined in too. And the kids were looking at me going, oh my God.
Uncle Sean!
Total embarrassment. It was great.
The Pinnacle, I saw a movie as well. That's my highlight of my week. But it wasn't Nativity 3, it was Interstellar. The Christopher Nolan. I thought you had your finger on the pulse, Sean.
I do, but it's on my neck.
Yeah, it's the sci-fi epic by Christopher Nolan, who did the Dark Knight trilogy. Pretty much one of the most revered directors in the world right now. He's just a bit of an enigma, director-wise. He does whatever the hell he wants. Like, studio execs throw hundreds of millions at, and they don't even question what he does in everything.
No.
All his movies turn to gold. And he's done it again, man. It's cool. It's just
so is this a new movie?
yeah. It's been pretty well hyped, and it's Matthew McConaughey in it, and I won't give it away too much, but he has to jet off into deep space to save humanity. I feel like it was made just for me, that movie. I'm a big kind of 2001 A Space Odyssey fan.
Yeah.
Films like that, trippy sci-fi stuff. So yeah. I saw it in IMAX in Liverpool, huge screen. The noise is phenomenal, man, and it's just, yeah, I was in heaven. And a few people walked out on it, which that just is a sign that it's fantastic, because they just couldn't handle the intensity of it. You got to see it.
Amazing.
You got to see it, man. It's properly out there. So that was my week. I've done lots of other things, but we don't want to talk about that all morning, do we? Some people actually do enjoy this part of the show, but we have to balance it out and talk about the serious stuff, because it is quite a serious topic this week. Or serious we get, because I've been wanting to talk about this for a while, because a big part of life is death, isn't it, Sean?
Yeah.
And it will come to all of us at some point, though there are a few scientists working on trying to eradicate death, but we'll not talk about that today, because they might get there, but people aren't generally that well prepared for death. Not for themselves so much, but for the people around them. It's a hard thing to deal with, right?
I think I meditated a lot on this when you talked about doing it, and it was very topical because of this thing that I'm doing today with the company about change. And I began to realise, the more I thought about it, that that's what loss is. Loss is dealing with change. Change is loss. And if you think about that throughout time, if you could go right back to when you as a child went to nursery school or to school for the first time, and you went through that rite of passage, that rite of change, where you were no longer with your mother, you were now in the place school or whatever.
Yeah.
There would have been a sense of loss. There's a newness, and there's the challenge, but there's also the loss of what's just gone.
Mm-hmm.
And throughout life, the one thing that is constant is change. Life never stays the same, from day to day, moment to moment, week to week, year to year. It's changing, it's moving all the time. And each time it changes and moves, there's a past, and the past represents something that we attach to, and as soon as we attach to it, that's when we experience loss.
Right.
And that could be the loss of another person, but it could be loss of position. It could be loss of status.
Right.
Yeah?
Yeah, okay.
And there's losses in things like having an operation. If you have a mastectomy, you know, or you have a testicle removed or something like that, that there's a massive shift in how I see me. And I see the person that I was, which is the past, as the person that I am. And I have that sense of loss for what was.
Yeah. I need to go watch Interstellar again, partly because I want to, but also that is it's dealt with quite a lot in the film. I mean, it's a film about, set in the grandeur of space, but ultimately it's about a dad and his daughter that have to kind of get separated because he goes off on this mission.
Yeah.
I'm not giving too much away there. That's all in the trailer, guys. Don't worry. But yeah, have you had much loss, change to deal with in your life, Sean? Personally, I haven't had that much yet. No. It's going to hit me at some point, but
are you identifying loss in terms of death?
Well, I am, because that was my idea for the show, but clearly you've hijacked the idea.
I think that death is a huge loss. I'm not saying that, but what I'm saying is that life is full of loss.
Yeah.
It's full of, because it changes, it's full of loss.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, losses have been huge. Even when you go through a change which you wanted to do, there's still an attachment to what was.
Yep.
Yeah, so even in positive change, you know, you move to a new house and you love your new house, it's great, it's fabulous, but you still have a nostalgic attachment to the things we did and the times we had in the previous house.
Yep.
And that's active loss.
Sure, okay.
It's there, yeah. The thing for me isn't that that loss is purely about death. Loss is about change. But our ability to cope with death as a loss,
mm-hmm,
is about our ability to let go of the past.
Yep.
Loss and bereavement is a process where we're learning to let go of what was and to come into the new present. Our whole issues in the book and the courses we run about live in the present is about how is it that we stop that past affecting the present. Now, there's some things that you will never, ever get rid of, and there will always be a connection to the past, and it may be that events could be songs, could be films, could be books, could be sound, smells, taste that take you back to a past event and you revisit it.
Yep.
But being emotionally healthy is being able to visit that and feel that effect, but then being able to return to the present again. And I think that emotional health in that sense is about how quickly do we return to the present.
How quickly do we bounce back, eh?
Yeah, because if we don't, then we become depressed.
Or anxious and all that stuff.
Well, anxious is more to do with the future.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's more that kind of past.
But they are the two kind of opposite lends of the spectrum. We try and help people to stay bang in the middle of it. Yeah.
But yes, I mean, you're focusing around the idea of the loss of a person in death.
I am, yeah, because, well, people aren't that great at dealing with it, I guess, as I see, as I look at the world around me, and we're not that well set up for it. I mean, we talked before we came on air about how much we celebrate birth,
yeah,
which is obviously, well, you know, pretty obvious why, but death is not something that's even really talked about all that much.
But I don't know that was always true. If you look at even the Victorian times, where there was a high level of infant mortality.
Yeah,
And there's lots of songs that are very kind of maudlin kind of song. They're kind of climb up on my knees, honey bunny, and it's about the loss of children.
Yeah.
It was such a big issue that people had to deal with it. When you get the development of the welfare state and the NHS, death is taken out of the community. It's taken to these white buildings with white walls and white rooms where death happens, but so is birth. Birth has been taken out of the community as well.
Okay, that's quite interesting, that.
Yeah. Obviously you're hot on this one because you've just been through it again, is that when a child is born, there's something amazingly magical about, where did this person come from? You know, they weren't here yesterday, an hour ago, and suddenly they're here, suddenly there's this real living being who's here. And that is such a magical event, it's quite extraordinary.
Yeah.
Yeah? That deserves celebration, and we all go, woo!
Yeah.
But at the other end of life, or wherever that ending is, the same thing happens. Like, suddenly this person, they're there so completely one moment, and then they're not, they're gone. And in the same way that the magic of someone appearing, we've got the magic of someone disappearing. And at that point, we should be celebrating.
Well,
in the same way that we do.
Yeah, funerals, man. I mean, they vary. I haven't been to that many funerals. I mean, I say thankfully, but I guess there are places where you can learn a lot about people, so they're quite interesting things to go to. But there are, I mean, the circumstances of a person's death will play a big part in how people, well, what the atmosphere is like at the funeral and beyond that. I mean, if someone's had a happy, healthy life, lived 90 years, you know, they went in their sleep peacefully, everyone's happy, cheery, and then it's going to be a nice occasion, isn't it? But if someone's
equally so, what about the guy whose name I cannot remember, should be able to remember it, the lad that raised all the money and died of cancer.
Oh, yeah, recently. Okay.
Yeah? No, he died in what we would perhaps consider too early, from an illness, which we could look at with sadness and grief. And yet that guy had the capacity to turn this event into something which was so amazingly positive.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm not saying that the people around him didn't experience the grief and bereavement of loss. I'm not saying that. But his approach to his ending is very different to many of the people that you meet in life who are hanging on for grim death to whatever it is that they're hanging on to. And yet, in the sense of change is the one constant in our life, the ultimate change is that we die.
Yeah. I mean, I was going to say, he knew that it was imminent for him, but ultimately it is for all of us, really.
Yeah,
I mean,
we all have the terminal disease of being alive,
here and gone in a flash, really, aren't we? On the universal timeline and all that.
I mean, I assume that I will see you next week and we will record another podcast, but who knows what happens to either of us.
Uh-oh. Yeah,
in that time it is. Yeah,
the commentator's curse, Sean. Uh-oh, dear. What have you said? What have you done? Yeah, no, you're right, it's all about enjoying the moment, isn't it, and whatever.
Yeah, yeah, and really being happy in the now, living in the present. I mean, you and I will have this written on our foreheads or on our gravestones or something, but that whole idea about being in the now, being in the moment, is such a powerful place to be. There's always going to be a past, there's always going to be a future, and it's changing moment by moment.
Yeah.
You know, but we have to live in the moment. All that exists at this moment is you and I in a room with a microphone.
I know, it's depressing.
Nothing else exists.
It's depressing, isn't it?
I was just thinking how cool that
was. Yeah, what is it on Spike Milligan's gravestone? I told you I was ill. I like that. I like to have some witty little comment on my gravestone. I need to think about that. Think hard. A lot of people you see, I'm assuming, have had serious issues with grief and dealing with it, and or aren't coping very well with it. So what kind of advice do you give these guys
on
and girls?
What's going on, really. But change, and I'm going to use that word, because change embraces all kinds of things. It's the loss of past events, but it can be the loss of situation, loss of position, loss of stasis, loss of how I see myself.
Yeah.
And that can be the process of change. You know, like one day someone looks in the mirror and they see this person in the mirror and they think, who the hell are you? You know, who's stolen my body? There's an imposter in here. And suddenly they have that realisation. They've gone through the change process of ageing. And then they look at themselves and then they have the bereaved feelings for being younger.
Having a young child will do that to you, man. Every morning I look in the mirror and think, blow my neck.
Yeah. But at what point do you become the old order and your children become the new order? It's a bit like someone the other day was talking to me, because in this room we're in now, there's this big bookcase with a few hundred books in it. And someone was saying to me about how, you know, you're never going to be able to get rid of books. People really love books. People will want to hold books and all that kind of stuff, and which is okay if you were brought up with books. If you were brought up with an e-reader, your attitude is like to be, what the hell do you want those books for? Dirty, smelly things, waste of space, take up so much room, you can't lug it. All those books I could put into one little thing and have it in my pocket.
They're good kindling for fire for your wood burner, aren't they?
Yeah, right. Yeah. Burn book.
Maybe. Yeah.
Yeah, so to me, that idea about the change being constant is there with us all the time.
Mm-hmm.
So what I'm looking at when I'm working with people is the process of change. And the process of change goes something like this. I start off with business as usual. It's who I am, it's what's going on, it's what I know.
Sure.
And if I think about this from the point of view of working situations, say, suddenly I'm told that the world's been reorganised, that there's going to be change, something is going to happen, the world's going to be different. And whereas I'm used to getting up in the morning and coming and doing what I do, that this is likely to change. And the first thing that hits me is disbelief. And you hear people saying, you won't believe what they're going to do, you won't believe what they've done, I can't. And they go through all that process until they get to the point where they start to address the mean. What's this going to mean for me? And at that point, some people will just stick their head in the sand and try and pretend it's going to go away. Other people start to process, start to change things, start to adapt their lives. It may be that they decide that they need to kind of downsize, upsize, whatever. They're starting to look at what it is it's going to mean for them.
Cool.
Yeah. The bit that happens after that, and is usually after that, is you get an emotional outpouring. And people usually emotionally outpour once they're starting to process stuff through. And that emotional outpouring starts off with, very often it's tearful, it's sad, and it is the issues of loss. As it moves through that emotional process, it gets to anger. And when people get angry, that's when they start to make things different. That's when they really start to get a crack on. And you see that in bereavements of death, you see it in bereavements of divorce, and in changes in redundancy and stuff like that. The people start to get things moving, and then they start to play with it. So the world started to change. Maybe the workplace has changed. Mm. So now they're playing with it. They've got their toe in the water, they're experimenting, and they're getting into the new situation. And then gradually it normalises. It becomes the normal thing that we do.
Yeah.
The change is complete. And then people will sit down and talk about, can you remember when? And they will have nostalgia for how it was. But they're actually processed and normalised into the new situation.
Okay.
Yeah, and people's ability to do that and process it through is about their emotional health. How easily can they cope with change?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay.
And there are some people that will never normalise into the present. They will keep stuck in the past.
Yeah. Some people just, I mean, this is the whole lifelong learning thing as well linked to this, isn't it, in terms of, how malleable you are as a human being, and how we can, you know, for me, for my side of things, it's kind of technology, you know, it's how I've got to stay on the ball and learning new tricks. But how long will I be like one of those old people that doesn't get the technology of their time, or will I always be on the ball with it? I don't know.
I can remember a monk said, I was using one of the very first Apple machines when they had the coloured apple on them.
Yeah.
It was. It didn't have Windows or anything like that. You're having to do
running commands and all that stuff.
Yeah, everything was keyboard commands. Yeah. And this monk's looking over my shoulder, and he actually said to me, "I don't have a clue what you're doing. I don't understand. You're pressing your fingers, and things are coming up on that screen, and it's completely outside of anything that I know, have experienced, or understand at all." He said, "I'm too old. I need a new brain." And he was in his 80s, but he couldn't grasp what was going on. It was just so completely meaningless.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. I know. Not all people are like that, are they? But it is quite. As we get older, we do kind of. I guess we do get more and more set in our ways, don't we?
But if you think about the criticism that I hear on a daily basis now of young people being locked into their devices.
Yeah.
And they've all got very muscular thumbs. And they can do it so quickly. And they're texting and Facebooking, whatever they're doing.
Yeah.
And the people that are outside of that, that are becoming the old order, see that as being wrong and bad and disgusting and how it's going to destroy the world.
Yeah.
And those people that are young now, they've got the energetic thumbs, when they get older, they will look back and they will see the new generation coming up and they will be really shocked.
There's a photo and a quote alongside it from back in the whatever 40s, 50s of this new technology that is coming that's making everyone antisocial and not talking to each other, and it's a photo of people on a train all reading newspapers.
Books were seen the same way, and that whole process about change, that's what it is. When people are looking back in horror and they're seeing everyone using their devices, they're actually describing their experience of loss, their loss of how the world should be.
Technology as well is I'm just thinking of the positive ways technology can help in terms of helping with grief and stuff. And I mean, obviously we have this huge amount of data on people now in terms of people putting statuses online and taking photos here, there and everywhere. So people in some ways kind of live forever because all this stuff that you're reminded of can keep them alive a little bit. Is that positive or negative?
It's both. I mean, I think one of the other things that I think of when you say that is the idea of a neutron bomb. A neutron bomb was designed to explode in the atmosphere above an area and to create a shockwave that would wipe all the computer systems.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that we think everything's backed up and we've got multiple copies of whatever, but in the right set of circumstances, with just a huge electrical discharge in the atmosphere, it'll be wiped blank.
Yeah.
And all those things would cease to be.
Oh, my Dropbox account, damn it.
Yeah, everything, gone.
Yeah. getting back to grief, if I may, some people, it would seem, have kind of a certain level of addiction with their grief and they don't want to let go. So there might be people listening to this that have just lost someone and then desperately clinging on to the memory of that person and they don't want to move on, you know. So what do you say to those people?
it's that change process that's going on.
Is that just part of it?
People get stuck at different points. To effectively change, you have to be able to think and feel differently. And sometimes people are at a point where they will say, well, I actually don't want to think or feel differently. Now, I don't want to let go of this.
Yeah.
I want to hold on to this. And that's okay. That's okay. You'll get people. I can remember working, and the very first people I worked with back in the end of the 70s, and there were people there who had lost, as teenagers, they'd wave their boyfriend, girlfriend, off to war, and the person never came back.
Yep.
And they had never been able to get beyond that, and there were a huge amount of spinsters that lived together. There would be women living together that weren't lesbian. They were just living together for mutual support, both financial and emotional.
Yep.
And you might get two or four of them in a house, whatever. And they were people who had never, ever had another relationship. Never. Mm. As far as they were concerned, they were still connected to the person who had died.
Sure.
Yeah, and they'd never, ever moved on. And you could either see that as a positive, wonderful, emotionally romantic thing, or you could see that as a waste of life, depending on which angle you come at it from.
Okay.
Yeah. But there are some people that hold on to the past like that, not with positive nostalgic emotion, but with anger and grief and hatred and all those kinds of things, and they can't let go with that almost like bitter elastic that's inside them that holds them to the past.
Yeah,
and there are lots of people like that around. I mean, we all know people who are negative, who focus on the negative, who find it really, really difficult to focus on the positive, to give other people a break. All that kind of stuff. Everything's negative.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You don't know any people like that, do you?
Let me go. I meet lots and lots of people like that.
Yeah. Be very careful not to mention any names.
But it's very, very difficult for some people to let go of any negative connections, which means that the present can never be positive.
Yeah.
Because I keep dragging the negative into the present.
And they hold on to them, like cuddling them like a teddy bear.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But that also, In holding on to it like that and keep breathing life into it is a really unhealthy place to be.
Mm-hmm.
People that do that tend to be iller. and continually ill. Because it's that thing about when we hold negatives about other people, it's like we've drunk the poison on the basis that it's going to hurt the other person.
Yeah.
You know, but it doesn't. It damages us.
Mm-hmm.
And people become living proof of that. Our bodies are the living proof of what we hold emotionally.
Yeah. I mean, we were talking before again, we came on about funerals and how they, some of them need a bit of a change in thought and process, but there's that scene in Love Actually, isn't there, which you've seen more than me probably, because I know you and Ria are addicted to that, you watch it every night before you go to bed, where the wife of one of the characters, the Irish dude Liam Neeson, has died. It's a funeral.
Yeah.
I think you didn't meet her actually. It's just a funeral, and she has that music that she wanted played.
Bye, baby.
You know, she's done as a bit of a joke and a bit of a trying to lighten the atmosphere. But everyone, you get the sense that everyone in there is a bit kind of like, well, some enjoying it, and some are almost a little bit offended that this serious occasion has been, you know, spoiled.
That's the interesting thing about funerals to me, and funerals have been some of the most joyful and funny things that I've ever been to. But the idea of is this funeral a reaction to loss and grief, or is this a reaction to a celebration of life and joy? It's two ways of looking at it, isn't it? And maybe that comes back to what you were talking about, which is how does somebody die?
Yeah.
If someone has died in very violent or tragic circumstances, the issues of loss and our connection with that loss may be completely different.
Mm.
So if it's been a happy ending.
Yeah, it does. I read an article last night actually about, it's funny, isn't it, when we come up with these show titles and then little things in the week back before just kind of,
it's your perception that changes.
It's law of attraction stuff, isn't it? Anyway, but it was an article about loss, and it was to do with the April Jones case, you know, the little girl that was taken and well, she was murdered, not pretty at all, but the parents of April have just kind of, they witnessed the demolition of the house where she spent her final moments, and the article was examining whether or not that was a necessary process for them, or whether it's just papering over the cracks a little bit.
I think that is tough. They did the same with the West's house, Fred West's,
right?
Because people couldn't cope with the idea that these things had gone on in this house. If you go to any church or any castle or whatever, those places very often were places of torture and pain, and people died in them, you know, the older churches and places with dungeons and stuff like that, but we don't flatten those. There's an interesting thing between historical death and new death, isn't there? If death is historical, somehow it becomes archaeology.
We
have less emotional attachment to it.
Mm-hmm.
Than if it's right under our noses right now.
Yep.
Yeah. But again, that's the issue of change and the process of change.
Mm.
Yeah.
I'll put the article up for that in the show notes as ever, but it's quite interesting stuff. Again,
what do you think? Do you think that they should have knocked it down? Does it make sense to you?
I guess I can see why, especially if they're still living in the area and they're driving around, and I'm assuming they probably wouldn't drive anywhere near that place anymore anyway, whether it's there or not. Yeah, I can see. So I mean, they actually I think witnessed it getting bulldozed as well. It wasn't like the council just knocked it down, you know, without them knowing, or them knowing but not being there. They actually went to watch it taken down, which I thought again was interesting stuff. But I don't know, man, you don't know about stuff till you're in their position, do you?
No, but the thing that is always true, and one of the people that I learned this from was Hugo Green, who was the rabbi who was in Auschwitz and lost all of his family in there. And he was somebody who, yes, you could feel that deep level within him of the pain of what he'd experienced. And yet he was one of the bravest, funniest, most positive people I've ever met.
Yeah.
For me, it's that thing, like, yes, bad things happen to us, but that's not the point. It isn't what happens, it's what do we do next.
Uh-huh.
And that's the whole issue about being able to deal with the past, get into the present, and be able to create a joyful future. And people will always say things like, yes, but it's all right for you to say that because you haven't experienced what I have experienced.
Mm.
I've experienced my own pain. Other people have experienced their pain. That's not the point. And it's not a competition to who's had the worst pain. It's about how are we dealing with it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. So for me, loss and change are inseparable. Because change creates loss, but loss is about change.
And change is inevitable, so you better get used to it, basically.
Yeah, yeah. Emotional health is about how do we process it.
Yeah.
Yeah?
Okay. I like it. I think that's quite a nice little way to sum up.
Yeah.
Would you say?
Yeah, I'd say that.
Only because you're looking at your watch and you want to get out of here.
I can't stand anymore.
I'm only joking. You didn't really, folks.
No.
No.
I just did because you said that.
What's your resource of the week, Sean?
I'm going back to the book, to the Live in the Present book, because if you have problems with loss and change, you need to do steps at least 1, 2, and 3.
Yeah.
You need to go through that process of letting go of what was and focusing positively into what is.
Yep.
Yeah? Then you've got a chance of creating what you want. But there's no way that you can create a positive future whilst you're held back in the past.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't work. And in saying that, it isn't an instant fix. Most people going through bereavement processes or loss processes and change, you're talking about at least 2 years. It takes 2 years to process things through.
It's hard work.
Yeah. Yep. And it seems like an enormous time when you, on the outset, when you look back, it isn't so long.
Mm-hmm.
You know, some heavier losses may take you longer than 2 years.
Yeah.
Yeah. And like I say, when you have profound losses, maybe there's bits of it that do never go away. There'll always be a connection to it. But that isn't the point. It's acknowledging that. And okay, now let's get on with it.
Right.
As Susan Jeffers would say in her book, feel the fear and do it anyway. Acknowledge it. Okay, you can't do anything about that. Okay, now what are we going to do next?
Plow on regardless.
Yeah.
Cool. I got two movies to recommend, which both deal with death in different ways. One is called The Fountain, which I might have mentioned in a show note resource ages ago, but what the hell. Do it again. It's got Hugh Jackman in it and a few other cool people. But it's basically about a guy who's trying to cure cancer and his wife's dying from it at the same time. It's a bit trippy, I will warn you now, and it flips between two other periods of time, way in the past and way in the future. It's pretty out there. It's cool. And the other one is Life is Beautiful, which is an Italian movie. It won an Oscar way back 15 years ago when it was made. Incredible film. Really kind of bittersweet, but it's funny, like really funny, and it's basically the premise is that it's in a concentration camp later on in the movie, and the father and the son are in this camp, so it's pretty heavy stuff, but the father is trying to make it a positive experience for his lad, and it'll break your heart. It's incredible. It's in my top 10 movies of all time. It's just superb, so you gotta watch that. I'll get you a copy.
That sounds heavy but good.
Oh man, you'll be laughing
Nativity 3.
And crying. It'll probably top that a little bit. I can't make any promises. Okay, right, well done. Head over to our website, liveinthepresent.co.uk, for all the show notes and links from today and lots of other cool stuff. Sean mentioned our book. We've just had it reprinted, haven't we?
Yep. And next year we will have the updated version out.
We will.
Yeah.
We shouldn't tell people about that because they might not buy this edition.
All right. I didn't say that.
he's lying. He's making it up. Head over for that. Share the show with a pal if you can. Spread the word. If you can leave a review on iTunes, we love that too. But none of that stuff, you don't have to do it if you don't want to. Just have yourselves a good week. And take it easy. Sean?
Yeah, I'm cool. Everybody, be happy.
Have fun at your little talk.
I will do. I'm going to enjoy the change.
I hope you don't get anything thrown at you, any tomatoes or anything.
No. It's just a little.
All right, see you later.
See ya.
Bye.